From pickleball to Wimby Beach to Japan to Fiji, diving for coral with Kieran Kelly, all sorts of things this morning. Whatever you're doing, enjoy. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. It's Nada from the Central Coast, from Terrigal Ocean Swimmers. I heard you asking what we're doing this morning, so I thought I'd bring up and say that we're swimming from Maitland Bay Beach to Kilcare.
How far is that, Nada?
It's about 3.5 kilometres.
Wow. And cool this morning? Cool? Getting cool?
Yes, it is cool. The water's still warm. It's about 21 degrees, but it's about 12 degrees where I am now.
And what's swimming do for you, Nada? You obviously do this pretty regularly.
Yeah, so I started up Terrigal Ocean Swimmers Facebook group, and there's a whole bunch of swimmers, and
They're swimming around.
Great for mentor.
Yeah,
sorry.
They're swimming around Australia. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, pretty much. We're swimming. Well, this series, it's called the Psycho Swim Series. We're swimming from the entrance to Umina Beach in nine legs. So that's about 40 kilometres.
Oh wow!
And next week's the longest one. That'll be nearly seven kilometres. That'll be our last leg.
It's interesting how we get in little groups, isn't it? We're swimmers and we're joggers stroke walkers and then we're bike riders. And then there's a lot of us who don't do anything.
I bet you do. You do lots.
Well, yeah, but not any regular exercise like riding a bike or swimming. But swimming's if I had to choose, I'd choose swimming even in the winter, because the water's usually warmer than the outside, isn't it, in winter?
It is. It is here anyway. Yeah, it's definitely warmer and it's just so good for our mental health and just aerobic and general exercise and mental health. It's so good. Everyone should get into it.
Yes, I think so too. It's very good for you, swimming actually, and good for you. Usually on Monday mornings, I don't know, but in the paper usually, they used to have a picture of the local football team, AFL or NRL or whatever, and they're all down at the beach hugging with their arms folded but walking around in the water and in baths and stuff like that, because it's probably – that's what they do. It's a good – after the weekend's matches to go and have a swim, I think, a bit of saltwater therapy.
Absolutely. I just pictured that perfectly when you said that. Yeah, I remember seeing those photos.
Yeah, it used to be a regular thing for the footy people. Oh, well, it's a bit different than people running around the football field. Well, let's catch them down at the beach and they walk around. They usually look like the poor little cold little possums.
They're freezing.
but it must be good for them. It must be some sort of, as you say, a bit of psychotherapy.
Oh, psychotherapy and cold water on your body is good for you, and then just different movements of the muscles. Very, very good for you.
And takes the weight off your legs and knees and things like that too.
Yes, it does. Yep. So any sore joints, take up swimming.
All right, mate.
Fear of sharks, take up swimming.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to my mate Kieran later this morning. He's a great friend of the shark. He loves the sharks.
Yeah, I don't fear them at all. No. Not at all. We know the statistics. It's ridiculously low, so I don't worry about them at all.
No, I don't worry about them either. The only shark that's going to get me, I'll have gravel rash, as my friend used to say. Nada, good on you. Happy swimming today.
Thank you, Macca.
All right, good on you. See you later.
Love you. Bye.
Dawn's in Batemans Bay in New South Wales. How are you, Dawn?
I'm really good. Macca, how are you?
Yeah, good.
That's good. Macca, I just wanted to tell you about a really special Anzac Day service coming up next Saturday at a little beach in Batemans Bay called Wimby Beach. Mm. 5 years ago, I was lucky enough to go to Gallipoli, and while I was walking in the water at Gallipoli, I thought, why can't we do something special at home to honour these boys, the Australian boys and the New Zealand boys, who lost their lives at Gallipoli. So when I came home, together with three friends, we put out 300 candles on Wimby Beach, and then it's grown and grown until last year we had 1,300 candles and we had 500 people in attendance. It's a really moving service. We have young Jamian Wright with his bagpipes, he goes out onto a rocky outcrop. And as the sun comes up, he plays flowers in the field on his bagpipes. Then we have a Kiwi and an Aussie reciting the ode together. And when the last post is played, the two surf boats from the Batemans Bay Surf Life Saving Club that row from Malua around into Little Wimby Beach, they raise their oars as a sign of respect while the last post is playing. And the candles just light up the entire foreshore. This year we're going to have written Lest We Forget in candles. Last year we had Thank You. It's just the most peaceful and respectful service. There's not, you can hear a pin drop. And last year there wasn't a dry eye in the audience with, it's just so moving and so different.
Sounds fabo. Sounds lovely. The bagpipes, there's something about the bagpipes, and I know because of the time it was back in 1915, the boys who are gone and the boys who remain would just, they would love that. They would love, I think it's a lovely tribute, Dawn.
Thank you, Macca. Everyone that comes says how wonderful it is, and we've now got people coming down from Canberra who were here last year who want to come again. It's just a different way for people to show their respect, and I think more than ever.
There needs to be more of it. There needs to be more of it, Dawn, in this world we live in. There needs to be a reset in Australia. There's something gone terribly wrong, I think, in Australia, although it's a lovely place and there's lots of lovely people like you, Dawn, and the people who do, but I think we need a reset and just... manners need to come back too in Australia. I think we've lost the art of manners. Those boys who went overseas, they always did the right thing, and we've lost that. I think we've lost that.
And it's very, very sad, and I think that's why people get so upset at this service when they think of all those boys who did what they were called to do.
Exactly.
Didn't think twice, put themselves behind just so that they can make it a better place for us. And they would be sad today to see Australia, I think. As you say, Macca, we have to really think about what we want Australia to be.
Mm. And look, it really starts with manners, I think, and the rudeness that you see on the road and the, you know, I go around this big city here and there's bikes strewn all over footpaths and nobody does anything about it, no premier says anything about it. I mean, it's just... You know, anyway.
Those boys had courage. The people in power today do not have the courage to do what they need to do to get us back on track.
No, there's no gain for them to do that, so they do nothing. That's what it seems to be. But, Dawn, people such as you and the people who go along set a great example, and that's what we need, good examples, and that's a great example. That's it. How did it get the name Wimby Beach? Wimby, what's Wimby mean?
Okay, I'm not sure about Wimby.
Well, you find out and let me know, okay?
I'll let you know.
Someone will ring us, for sure. Good on you.
Thanks, Macca. Bye.
Pleasure, bye. Gary, what are you up to?
Yeah, hi, Ian. I'm on my way up to Blacktown, Sandhope Gardens of Blacktown from Gymea to play in the New South Wales Pickleball Championships today.
That's in Sydney. Pickle?
Yes,
did you say pickleball? Yep. Did you say pickleball?
Absolutely. It's the third day of our championships, and we've had 1,100 competitors, all ages, you know, 11 to 80, young, early 80s, and it's been a great weekend weatherwise, yeah.
Pickleball is sweeping the nation, I think. I've got a mate who's French. He's from France, and he's lives in Australia now, but he's... He's discovered pickleball about a year ago. Every time I see him, which I'm trying to limit, he tells me about pickleball. Pickleball this and pickleball that. So this is it's like tennis and cross between tennis and squash or something, is it?
And badminton, yes. It's played with a plastic wiffle ball on a small size court and very competitive or social as you like. You know, it's a great cross-section of the Australian community. You'll see what the beautiful cross-section of cultures, ages, just fantastic.
And so this is the state championships. Where are they in Blacktown today?
At Stanhope Gardens in Blacktown. And today is mixed doubles days, which is a lot of fun because a lot of married couples play together and leave their performance on the court tests the relationship at times.
Oh, exactly. I was just going to say that. I don't think that's a... It's like the couple who go on holidays for the first time in the caravan and... one of them wants to get out after about 3 days.
Yeah.
if you miss a shot, I assume in pickleball, it could be an argument.
Yeah, there's certainly an interesting expression on faces when it goes between a couple and they look at each other and it's the jaws, you know. So a lot of divorces on the pickleball court today.
So what happens? What does the winner win? And do you get a racket or big prize money?
We play for medals, no prize money, gold, silver and bronze medals and bragging rights and, it's just a lot of fun. And
Where does pickleball come from? Where's that come from?
It comes from the US originally and it's not a young sport anymore. It started in the sort of 60s but I think a lot of the credit of the growth has come out of COVID when people were looking for, recreational activities outdoors and that's what really kicked it off and boomed, and it's certainly taken hold of Australia. There's, I think, something like about 200,000 people engaging with pickleball in Australia now, and New South Wales has got over 10,000, or just about to go over 10,000 members from sort of half that a year ago, so it's just going exponentially.
All right, good on you, Gaz. Good luck at Blacktown today. You said you get how many people you get there? How many players?
We've had 1,100 over the weekend, so there'll be about 400 or 500 today, yep. Yep.
Is it a good spectator sport? Does people crash and burn or what, anything?
It's very good. There's a lot of pressure on and certainly the young athletics are very good to watch and even the older seniors are a bit of fun at times because there's a lot of serendipity sort of moments and a lot of banter and it's quite entertaining, yep.
All right, good on you. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Ian. Take care. Thank you.
G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Macca. My name's Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you? Yeah, I'm in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, just sitting out on the veranda watching the sunrise. Nice, cool, crisp morning.
I bet it is. Where are you, Mittagong?
Yeah, out the back of Mittagong and Woodlands.
You'd be nearly zero, wouldn't you, around there?
It's about 4 degrees right now, and nice mist in the gully down by the dam.
Yep.
But, I'm a fellow WAPSA, so Woolen Pastoral Scientist, like yourself.
All right.
A few years back.
Yes, exactly.
But I was on the land for a while after uni, and we ran a lot of sheep and cattle up in the New England, and then... done lots of different things over the years. I was actually in the same year as Chrissy Brown, who I know you've had on the show, and out at Riola, out in the far northwestern corner of New South Wales.
Yeah, yeah.
Now Harvey, big shed out at Riola.
Yes.
But, it feels like a past life now. sheep and wool, chasing sheep around the hills of the New England.
Yeah, I should talk to you. Did you hear I bumped into a bloke out the show from from Food Technology at Uni New South Wales.
No, I missed that one.
All right, yeah, anyway, go on.
So I grew up this way, and you were talking to a bloke about camp drafting. Well, my parents had an Australian Stock Horse Stud, and Dad was sort of part of setting up the Australian Stock Horse Society back in the day. And, he used to go around classifying all the original horses into the Australian Stock Horse Society. So, yeah, grew up on the back of horses, training horses and going around all the camp drafts. So, it's something that I'm probably going to get back into when I get around to it.
But in the meantime, you're just sitting on the veranda in Mittagong, having a cuppa, are you?
Yeah, having a cuppa, listening to you, listening to the birds, watching the sunrise. All right. Yeah.
All right. You should go swimming, Andrew. You better come in.
Up here, but I think it's a bit cold for me, Macca.
You better come in one morning and have a yarn, okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. But if you want to know about camp drafting, I can explain it for you.
All right, not now because I've got to go to the news, but I'll ring you back. 1300 700 222. Give us a ring at 7. On the line, I have a bloke called Joel. Joel Lidgow. Good morning, Joel.
Morning, Macca.
How you going?
Oh, living the dream.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joel and I, Was it? How long ago was it, Joel? 2 years ago?
No, it was more like 5 or 6 years ago.
Really? Is it really? God help me. Joel, anyway, there was a bloke down called Ron Sinclair, down in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, and he rang me up one day and said, look, Ian, I've got all this hay here. It was in the middle of the drought. And he said, I've got all this hay here I've just harvested and I can't do anything with it. What will you do? So we rang up and we found someone who needed it, and I rang Joel. I met Joel at the Australia Day show in Gyra, didn't I? You were up there for some reason?
No, that was after we done the
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Where did I meet you first, Joel? Doesn't matter.
I think you just rang me. I think you got onto a local agent.
That's right. Yeah.
They passed my number on.
Anyway, so Joel loaded it up on board his truck and off we went to the Pilliga.
to the Pilliga, the middle of nowhere.
And I was just thinking the other day, Joel, if it had been the cost of diesel now, I don't think we would have done it, would we?
It definitely would have been a love job, a lot of love.
It would have. That's a song, gonna take a lot of love. But Joel, tell me, you're still driving your truck and you drive. Tell us about the price of diesel and how it's affecting you when you travel, say, to Adelaide and things like that.
Well, we've got pretty good customers that this is our third time fuels spike like this. It's never spiked this high, obviously. But we're looking at Port Kembla to Adelaide, anywhere between $850 and $1,000 extra on top of the trip.
Extra?
Yeah, in fuel. That's just an extra fuel cost. So we got fuel levies in place and all that gets passed on. But someone's got to pay it eventually. Mm. You can't keep passing that cost down through the consumer line and no one pays. Someone has to pay eventually.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking up around 30% extra in fuel, in our fuel levies. But the fuel's gone up about 54%. Well, I had when it was about $3.20 a litre. It's come down now.
But I think it's come down, yeah. I saw a $2.99 or something, but that's just in the city. I don't know what it's like out there. But I was talking to Ron Finmore the other day, and he said something, well, not the same as you. He said, I'm paying about $1 million more. I don't know if that was a day or a week or something like that, but yeah, you said it's $1,000 extra. So yeah, that would translate into that. That was for his truck.
Wouldn't that bring a tear to your eye?
Sorry?
Wouldn't that bring a tear to your eye?
Yeah, but of course it's going to be passed on, and I don't know what the latest thing with the closure again of the straits and all that sort of stuff. So maybe it'll go up again. Who knows? Although we don't get a lot of our fuel from there, do we? We get it from Singapore. No. I don't know where they get it from,
they're having the same problems in Europe. Like you got farmers and truck drivers in Ireland striking, and for the same reasons. Well, what side of the straits is oil on? It can't be blocking both ends.
No, it can't, Joel. So, how's life on the road apart from this? This happened a month ago now, or 5 weeks ago, I don't know.
Yeah, something it's been like about a month. Yeah, yep.
So you're still obviously pretty busy because people need things, but they'll just, and it's pretty easy, I suppose, to pass on the, and ends up passing it on to the consumer. Ron said that, he said now April, end of April, prices will go, we'll see them go up, and they're already going up. I think inflation's out of control myself, but when you just see basic foodstuffs and stuff, things like that, things that we buy every day, like a lettuce or apples or whatever, they always seem to
even non-perishables. It's all going to be affected by because when fuel's gone up 54%, no one can absorb that. Someone has to pay.
Uh huh. So Joel, life on the roads apart from the price of it's really life on the road is the price of diesel, isn't it? Really.
It is. It's the cattle. It's the centre of everything. Buying diesel. When I go in to pay now, and she says, "Oh, that'll be." I said, "Don't say it. Just put it up. I don't want to look at it. I'll just tap my card. We'll worry about that at the end of the month."
Oh, yeah. So Joel, when we went up to the Pilliga. I think just after that, it started to rain. We took all this, all this hay up there, and I think a week later, they got a lot of rain, which was good. It was the thought that counts, Joel.
I
reckon
all down the east coast. Well, that OB you done in Gora, which was that Australia Day long weekend.
Mm.
They had that much rain up there that they had debris blocking their like their spillways in their dams and stuff like that. But that's how much rain, and that was the last load of hay we sort of done. And then COVID hit a month later, and everyone went crazy with COVID.
Yeah, I'll say. We should catch up sometime, Joel. I won't get you to take any load anywhere sometime soon. But maybe it'll come down. I don't know. Who knows?
It will. It's unsustainable.
No, it is. It's unsustainable. People can't afford those prices too. You can't keep paying that sort of stuff when. And I don't know, but they said after COVID, didn't they, that everything was going to go down, you know, said, oh, this after COVID will be right, but it didn't seem to make much difference at the end of COVID, did it?
The new normal.
Yeah, it was the new normal. Let's hope this is not the new normal. You can't have enough money in your pocket these days, you know. I used to get, you know, $100 or $150 out and sort of last year a week, not for buying petrol, but now... It doesn't do a day.
I mean, my father used to leave home on a Sunday with $400 in his wallet, cash, and if he ran out of that by the time he got home on Saturday, he just went hungry for a day. Like, there was he never tapped a card he just budgeted for the week.
Yeah.
I mean, $400 is probably a lot of money back then, but you could spend that in a couple of days on the road now with the price of everything.
I'll say. Great to talk to you, Joel. Good on you, mate.
You too, Marco. You take care.
Yeah, you too, mate. Bye.
I'll catch up with you. See you, mate.
Early this morning, I spoke to Andrew, and he was just about to explain to people what camp drafting was, because I think that's sometimes there's a lot of people who don't know about those sort of things. Andrew, I don't know if he's still sitting on his veranda in Mittagong where he's freezing to death. Andrew, good morning again.
Yeah, g'day, Mac. No, I'm sitting in my car now outside the Mossdale sale yards. It's about 2 degrees, my car reckons.
Uh-huh. And is there a sale on today?
Oh, no, I'm just on my way over to my parents' place over at Fitzroy Falls. They've got a small retirement farm out there.
Uh-huh.
Going to have some brekkie and spend some time with them.
That's a conundrum, isn't it? A retirement farm?
Yeah, it's never retirement, I don't think, but no. We've got a few cattle and a few horses there and enjoy that.
Explain to people what a camp draft is, Andrew.
Well, originally it was when the drovers were out sitting in the camp where they'd hold the cattle. You know, it might be two or three drovers that keep an eye on them overnight and have them sort of in a mob called a camp. So that's where the word camp comes from in camp drafting. But basically the bushmen used to, for entertainment, pick one of the beasts out of the mob and work it sort of at the front of what they now call the camp, which is just a small yard. And there might be, you know, 10 to 15 or 20 steers or cattle in the camp, in the small yard. So they pick one out and they show, I guess, the skill of the horse and the rider in the camp and work the beast at the front of the camp. And then they call for what they call the gate. So there's a couple of gates. They open the gate and then there's a course outside where there's a peg, depending on whether it's a left-hand or a right-hand course. If it's a left-hand course, there'll be a peg sort of fairly close on the left-hand side and you basically work the beast around this course and basically draft the beast around this course. So you go around the left, do a figure eight, come back around to a peg up towards the right, do another figure eight and bring the beast back around to what they call a gate, which is two pegs sort of further out, and then they get scored.
Sounds exhausting.
The rider gets scored in the camp and outside.
Yeah, it does sound exhausting for man and beast.
Yeah, it is, but it's good fun, and it's become very popular. Every man and his dog now, and the city blokes enjoy.
Every man and his horse.
They like buying expensive horses out of Dalby or Tamworth or where they buy them, and then get someone to ride them during the week and go camp drafting for the weekend. That's the latest thing.
Yeah, apart from coffee and the mobile phone, I think horses are another great pastime for people, whether it's race horses or trotting horses or pony club or camp draft or rodeo or all those sort of things, dressage. All the horses are very popular for people, and especially people in the city. They have their horses on adjustment, don't they? And
Mum and Dad have got a few on adjustment from over the road, but we used to have a riding school and used to breed a lot of horses. And they're magical animals, and I think they're good for mental health and relaxation. And I think they cost a lot of money to look after, of course, and they're basically more an expense than a pleasure sometimes.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. We talked to Nadia this morning, Nadia, about swimming, and she said it's good for you've got to indulge things today for looking after yourself, whether it's swimming or riding a horse or whatever, looking after things. Take your mind off the perishing motley, if you know what I mean. All the things that we get bombarded with all day about the Straits of Hormuz at the moment, but next week it'll be something else, and all the things that we look at in the paper and things that are happening in Australia, and we say, we can't believe that. You can't believe it. And that's why people say they turn off the news. They don't want to hear the news because it's full of bad news. So you need a horse, or you need to go swimming. You need to find something. Mine's the garden, but just wandering around the garden and planting a plant and seeing if it grows. So you need to do things for yourself, Andrew. And the horse, it seems to me, you go on the road and there's people with horses on the road going everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nothing like being on the back of a horse out in the middle of nowhere or out in nature somewhere, and you slow down and, I don't know, I guess you've sort of got time to think about what's important and what your priorities are in life.
But, Andrew, good on you, mate. I've got to fly, but thanks for the explanation. We'll catch up again.
Okay, Magga.
See ya. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and this morning it's coming to you from Fiji. Good morning, Kieran Kelly.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm good. And how's things in Fiji?
Hot and wet. That'll be even hotter and wetter tomorrow. I don't know what the air temperature here is, but the water temperature must be over 30 degrees. It's cooler to get out than it is to go in.
Yeah, and that'd be strange for you because you're always in the water, but it's usually about 20 degrees where you're swimming.
Yes, well, I've been doing about a kilometre and a half every morning, and I get out exhausted. I swim out to the reef, go around and come back. I've got to sit down for half an hour. It's so tiring. It is extraordinarily tiring swimming in hot water.
Yeah, I'll say. We just spoke to a lady this morning at Central Coast there. She's got a Facebook swimming club when they're doing some swims up there, 4 or 5 kilometres, and they're doing some hopping too, where they'll end up swimming about 40 k's up there. And I just spoke to Andrew there about horses. So swimming is a great, it's obviously for you. It wasn't called mental health benefits when you first started swimming, but that's the latest thing. But it's just good for the soul, isn't it, to go swimming or running or whatever you do, whatever.
Well, it is, but as Charles Dickens said, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. One of the things I was passionate about as a young man in my 20s was scuba diving, and I came to Fiji for a family get-together. I brought my daughter out from and her children out from the US and took the other two daughters, and we agreed to meet halfway in Fiji so the cousins could play and what have you. But I haven't dived Fiji for about 35 years. In fact, it was one of the last places I dived, and during my 20s, every holiday, every spare day, every weekend, I went scuba diving. And I was keen to see what it's like to go back in the water, to put the tank on after 35 years. And I loved diving reefs. In days gone by, I'd dived all up and down the Barrier Reef, dived on wrecks up in Vanuatu and reefs in the Solomons and as far east in Polynesia as the Cook Islands, and which is where I developed my love of sharks. So I was keen to see, what it's like under the water now. Has there been any changes? Have I changed? You know, it's something I was so passionate about when I was young. And I suppose the thing that's a bit off-putting is the subject we just talked about, which is how warm the water is. Now, I don't know whether it's just an old man's memory failing him, but I don't ever remember diving in water this warm. It tends to be a thermocline when you dive, when the top surface water is very warm and it cools as you go down. But Fiji isn't like that. And all the reefs I dived on, what I'd have to say, were devastated. And I was stunned. A reef, a coral reef, from my memory, I used to love going down, and I'd go down the line, get down to about 40 or 50 feet, and I'd find a patch of sand and kneel on it and just look up through the water at the sun glinting overhead, and you can see the surface ripples, your bubbles going up, and it's just a wonderful thing. You're in a different environment. Then I liked little creatures. So in a coral reef, a healthy coral reef, there's fan corals and brain corals, and there's crevices, and there's all little creatures scattering around, and I'd often look under a coral edge, and there's a little pair of eyes looking at you, or maybe a crayfish had run away, and then the big hoodlums in town had arrived, the sharks, and everyone's doing their thing and getting out of the road of the sharks. But there's large areas in Fiji, and I don't know whether it's indicative of the whole South Pacific, but I dived the whole South Pacific in my youth. And it's dead, it's grey and it's brown, and the little holes I know where to look for. The coral's still there, but it's all brown. And all the little creatures, all the little houses are still there, but there's no one in them. It reminds me of a country town in New South Wales where all the buildings are still there, but they're all boarded up and the people have left. And that was somewhat sad because I used to stay down there. Coral diving is only about 30 to 40 feet at its best. You don't get much the really vibrant coral below 40 feet. So you can stay down there forever on your dive tables. And I was very sparing with air, so I could sometimes do two dives a day. I just found it fascinating. And this, I suppose, made me a little sad, Ian, that the thing is such enormous beauty, a coral reef in its prime, in its pomp, like the Barrier Reef when I was diving, is just a thing of wonder. Of life and colour and vibrancy and movement and all the things I love.
And my friend, who's a marine, Tony Ayling, who's a marine biologist, and we've talked about it before, that it's a really, as you said too, it's another world. I mean, I haven't experienced it, but it's another world under there. You really, it's like taking off in a plane. You feel, well, I've left that mortal world behind and I'm up here in a plane now for a little while. And I suppose it's the same when you go down under the sea and under the surface, it's you're in another world there, a completely different world.
Well, you feel like a visitor, that's for a start, and it is so different. I mean, nature built some magnificent things that human beings have celebrated in poetry and song and films for a long time, but I don't think nature can surpass itself, or nature hasn't surpassed itself yet, in coral reefs, because they generate so much life. One of the things I became really fascinated about was night diving on coral reefs up on the Barrier Reef, or particular when the coral spawns, and it spawns after a full moon. So nothing happens up until the full moon, and about 2 days later, you go down there at night on a waning moon, and it goes nuts. All the coral spawns at the same time, and a lot of the nocturnal fish and animals, I remember the first time I did it, I'd never seen half these creatures come out, and it's all these things going mad in the coral spawn, and they're eating the spawn and something's eating them, and everyone's trying to get out of each other's throat. These are just beautiful experiences, and going diving once again and putting the tanks on and going down and feeling the pressure on the mask and equalizing and all the stuff that you do, it brought back so many happy memories for me.
Well, that's part of the reason why you went there, I think. It's good to go back. It's good to go back, isn't it, and look at and experience things. They say you can't go back, but, yeah, anyway, maybe that's just a temporary thing, Kieran. Maybe
well, I hope able so. To, yeah. And there wasn't anyone there really I could talk to. When I talked to the local Fijians, they, of course, claim that cyclones have done it. particularly off Castaway where I was. There was a beautiful fringing reef there at one stage, really, really superb, and it's not there anymore. But they've just had a massive cyclone go through, and I know cyclones do impact the growth of coral, but there's also, when I dived in both Melanesia and Polynesia, what, 40 years ago, it was pretty primitive. You know, you were often diving out of a pretty rough old boat and sleeping in a grass hut and eating bananas and coconuts. And seriously, it
sounds,
was,
well,
some
it sounds
of the
lovely.
Islands,
sounds,
some of the islands I went to, like Aitutaki, where I did had my first encounter with tiger sharks, we were sleeping in a grass hut. And on the in the sand, and it was, I mean, not so great if you get the bends and you need to get into a decompression chamber. I think the nearest one was in New Zealand, so there's that risk. But it was really primitive. But Fiji now, as an environment, as an economy, has developed enormously from the last time I was there, and the amount of boat traffic and the amount of people, and the islands were deserted. I used to dive off deserted islands. And I suppose, you know, people want their standard of living to increase, but the amount of boat traffic going in and out of these islands is just unbelievable. Well, I couldn't believe it.
It's tourism, I suppose. That's their main game, isn't it, tourism? And,
it's their only game.
Mm.
It's their only game. And, you know, I was interested in the ecology of the island. They claim the sewage system is entirely retained because nitrogen in the water will kill off coral quickly as anything. The garbage is all taken away and so on and so forth. But the amount of boat traffic and people that are going in and out of these places over the reefs and around the reefs, and they, you know, they're trying to preserve them as much as anyone. It's just phenomenal how it's changed. You'd be flat out finding a grass hut on a little coral place to go diving in the South Pacific, I think.
And that's the change, isn't it? You know, somebody said that to me, the very thing that attracts people to a certain place, whether it's, you know, the Gold Coast or Fiji, is the very thing that ends up, you know, spoiling it in some way because too many people, can be devastating to areas. Kieran,
well, Fiji's an interesting case because of what it is and where it is. I actually sat on a plane next to a gentleman from the United Nations. He was in banking and, you know, funding things going on in Fiji. Fiji's interesting. He told me that 80% of the trade, the tourism trade, comes from Australia, but 90% of the marketing is in America, and they want people to fly over Hawaii and go to Fiji, or don't go down to Jamaica, come to Fiji. How do you do that? You build magnificent hotels, not little grass huts. I'm talking. He was talking $5,000 to $6,000 US a night. That's a night. Thank you very much. And so, the economy now depends on it. That means it depends on aviation, gasoline, and airlines being reasonable. They need tourists to be able to afford to come. Then they need an enormous amount of diesel to run the boats to get people in and out of the islands, and they need the gasoline for the big dive boats. They had two 200 horsepower Yamahas on the back of the dive boat I went out on, and they just run on four-stroke petrol.
Mm.
So these economies are incredibly dependent now for their survival on tourism.
Exactly. Kieran, look at the time's flying. Tell me, what are you doing on Anzac Day? You're not staying in Fiji for Anzac Day, are you? Next Saturday?
No, we're back. We're back.
You always do something exotic, like rowing ashore at Gallipoli.
did that once.
Well, that's
do the dawn service at Isarava on the Kokoda track and end up crying the whole time. I like to do something. I might just go for a swim.
you'll be back in.
I like to observe the dawn service by going for a swim, being in the ocean, watching the sun come up, actually.
And I think Anzac Day will have a much, because of the things that have been in the paper the last couple of days, I think Anzac Day will have a special meaning for a lot of Australians, and it might straighten a lot of people out about where we live and why we live and what we do and what the original diggers did all those years ago when they were sent overseas and they just went. They didn't ask why or where, they just went, didn't they?
They did, and if nothing else, Anzac Day is a symbol of unity.
Let's
after Federation, before Federation, as I articulate in my book that's about to come out, they were really like separate nations, the colonies of New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. They almost could have gone to war with each other in 1900. But Gallipoli was a symbol of unity. Now, I've seen all sorts of people try and tear it down, but there's no doubt that it was the making of several states coming together in a way that I don't think Federation as a legislation, as a negotiation with the British Crown was. I think they were still a fairly loose collection of states, and while it was a horrific price to pay, it did weld a national unity that sustained us through a lot of ups and downs, through the Depression, two World Wars, and it's something to be celebrated, national unity.
Exactly.
I'm not one that wants to encourage divergent, conflicting communities. I think that's, you go to Anzac, when I went in there at dawn in the little fishing boat, splashed ashore with my daughter, I just thought, I know it's a war and I know it's tragic, but there was something of the nation building.
Exactly.
As we got our feet wet.
Kieran, great to talk to you, mate, in Fiji. You've given us the weather report, hot and wet.
Hot and wet.
See you, mate. I think I'd like to be in Fiji, but not when it's hot and wet. We've had enough of that in our summer. Autumn's kicked in, which is nice, and around the place, weather reports say that, yes, cool in, more cool than it has been, which is, yeah, it's easier to sleep, isn't it? It's easier to sleep. 1300 700 222, macatracks@gmail.com, wherever you are. Anzac Day, as I said, next Saturday. From the Kiwi Scribe, he says, when the last post is played next week on Anzac Day and people have no one in particular person in mind, please picture, if you may, Trooper Kenneth Anderson Bain, a surveyor prior to the Great War and a likeable sportsman. He enlisted with the Wellington Mounted Rifles, serving at Gallipoli. On the 27th of August 1915, a bomb was thrown into his trench, which exploded, and by the grace of God, his forearm provided protection for his face. Evacuated to England, the big wound took 2 months to heal, recovering as best treatment could afford with fingers in a limited flex position, which wouldn't allow for extension and muscles wasting on the forearm. Kenny Bain was attested as no longer fit for service. Whilst returning to New Zealand aboard the steamship Ruahini, just about 150 miles off Pitcairn Island, Trooper Bain was leaning over the guardrail on the evening of the 25th of November, 1916, when he spotted a baby, Theodore Austin, aged 2 years and 10 months, fall into the sea. While alone in his cabin, the baby boy must have crawled along his bunk into a porthole and fell into the sea. Without hesitation and despite his disability, Bain climbed onto the top of the guardrail and jumped overboard in an attempt to rescue the child. Despite illuminated buoys thrown overboard and an emergency lifeboat quickly launched, it was all to no avail. It was reported following the lengthy search, the place was infested with sharks, some as long as 10 feet in length, following the lifeboat. Again, if thoughts and prayers are directed to no one in particular, perhaps Kenny Bain might be just one of so many gallant, selfish strangers to heroic acts in our reflections this Anzac Day when the last post is played, says the Kiwi Scribe. That's pause for thought, isn't it? Pause for thought. As I said, give me a ring. What are you doing? You're just pottering around having your lattes? Got a lovely coffee song. A lovely coffee. I love coffee. I love to go. I just love to watch people order their different coffees. We just define ourselves by the coffee we order. We just say, and we usually say it loud. But usually, Harry knows everybody, so usually the Bristers, by now they know everybody's. Oh, just the usual, yeah, the usual. Whether it be an oat milk turmeric latte or whatever it is, they just know them after a while. You don't forget those things, Kel, do you? No, you don't forget those things. What else have I been up to? Nothing much really. Just doing my garden, planting some plants. I've decided to buy the little plants you get them at the nursery, and they're quite cheap. You know, they're about $4 or $5 or $6, and plant them as small seedlings, and rather than buy big pots, because they're very expensive. They're quite expensive, and if you buy a lot of them. And I like to plant a lot because not all of them survive in the garden. And as I was talking about before, you can like swimming, and swimming is good for you, or riding a horse or whatever your particular bent is, or jogging or running marathons or Ironmans, all the sorts of things, or collecting, whatever you do, it's good for the health. And I find gardening good and watching it grow. I don't grow little annuals where you have to dig them out each week and plant them, and that's why I don't plant veggies, because they need a lot of work, especially things like tomatoes where you get fruit fly and all those sort of things. So I just usually plant things and they just go, and yeah, I just watch them. I walk past them from time to time. And I love the insects in the garden. I love the little bugs you see, and little native, I don't know if they're bees, they're tiny little things. And sometimes I'll see a blue banded bee, and it's just lovely. I just love to sit and watch them, or a blue tongue. My blue tongues sort of hide away, but sometimes you'll catch them when the sun comes, especially in winter when they find a little rock. But that's why I don't like kookaburras and those sort of things, because they prey on those, yeah, and butcher birds. Don't like them in my garden. Don't like them at all. I wish they'd go away. And crows, that's all we have in our garden. We have crows, which are actually little ravens, and kookaburras, and butcher birds, and big birds. I don't mind the maggies. I love the magpies. But the rest of them, I lament that my garden and many gardens now don't have the little wrens and silver eyes and eastern spinebills and western spinebills and all those sort of things. They're just a thing of the past. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, good morning, Macca. It's Rod ringing from Bruny Island.
What's happening, Rod?
Well, this week is something always special to me, the Anzac Week coming on, because I'm a traditional brush signwriter that has the privilege of putting Lest We Forget written on the sports ground, the two ovals in Hobart.
In Hobart?
Yes, yeah, there are two particular grounds that each year have a special Anzac ceremony on Anzac Day. And during this week, I'll pick the weather and write Lest We Forget on both grounds, and letters probably about 30 metres long by about each one about 3 metres high.
And you're on Bruny?
Yes, I am, yes.
and so you go in there and do your best?
I'll just come down to Bruny for a couple of days getting ready for it, actually. I've got a place on Bruny, and it's only about an hour and a half drive from Hobart to get here with the ferry and that sort of thing, so it's not a problem. But the big thing is it's privileged to be able to do it, and I've done it now. I really can't remember how many years. They just ring up and just book it in, and I just turn up on the ground, line it all out, mark it out, and I don't use any AI. It's all done the old-fashioned way with all measurements, string lines, but I do have the ability to, being a traditional brush signwriter, to actually do the lettering without any other aids at all.
You spray it or anything like that?
No, this one here, because of what I do, I just use a roller and mark it out and just roll it on the ground.
And how long do they take, Rod?
I would do probably about 4 hours. Doesn't take all that long. No. The biggest thing is marking it all out. You put a string line top and bottom of the letter to keep them straight, and then just peg out the width of each letter with the space between them. And I just do it by eye from there. After all these years of doing sign writing, it just becomes second nature. And you don't need a lot of technology, but you do need a fair amount of skill and experience. But other than that, it's just a privilege to do it for these particular organisations each time of the year.
I'll say, and the only thing you do need as a sign writer is good spelling.
Don't tell me about that, because I'm dyslexic. So, yes, it's like being an accountant that can't add up. So don't worry, there's been a few spelling mistakes that have happened in the years. And when you're doing them big like this, you're writing each letter at a time. So you really do have to think about what you're doing. It's very easy. And it doesn't. You wouldn't think it is, but it is. You have to really concentrate as you're doing each letter at a time. But nothing that an old tradesman said to me, that you can gauge a tradesman by the way he hides his mistakes. And over the years, you learned about how to fix those up really quickly.
Yeah, and how did you start as a sign writer, Rod?
Well, when I left school early, I left at 16 then, had trouble at school because of that dyslexic problem. You're always sort of told you're dumb and those sort of things, and you didn't know why you couldn't read properly or what the problem was. And so I left school early. And those days you could go into a place, the apprenticeship commission, you could see whatever jobs were available for what qualifications you had. Sign writing was one of them. I had no idea of what was involved. But luckily I had a really, really good teacher, Don Prairie, who really gave me the time, and it was a five-year apprenticeship then. Everything was on the job. There was no technical stuff then, no computers, so you had to learn the disciplines of sign writing and the rules of lettering and spacing.
And he gave you a dictionary and a thesaurus.
I've still got a dictionary that I had from school. That's the only thing I've kept from school, a dictionary which I still carry with me today. It's an old... a little dictionary that sits in the top of my workbox, and without that, although now phones can correct it, you have the ability with mobile phone, you can stick a word in and it will correct it for you, and that's a saviour. That really is a saviour. Don't worry about that.
And who are the organisations you're doing the Less We Forget for?
This is for the Australian Rules in Hobart, AFL TAS, and they're both clubs. There's the football clubs, they have special things on their ground for marking the occasion. The Army actually turn up and they have a special parade as well. There's been a couple of times when I've been marking the ground, the Army's turned up and I can pull rank on them and say, no, you can't come on this lettering, otherwise your boots are going to get a bit of white paint. So we come to a compromise, but that has happened.
Yeah, the AFL and the NRL, the Rugby League and the Aussie Rules have both taken Anzac Day to heart, haven't they? Which is, I think, it's a great thing because it reminds people of, where their bread and butter comes from, if you know what I mean. It's the foundation of everything really here in Australia, as Kieran said, in lots of ways.
It really is, and my quality is not up to what they can do, when, you know, especially reproducing the Australian Army logo when you see them. And when I look at sports events, I don't look at the sport, I look at the ground markings and look at all that sort of thing. And it is incredible, but it's that emotional thing. I think it's a tribute now, and more young people are coming into it more and more.
Exactly.
I was involved, I was called up during the Vietnam incidents and that, and I actually, because I was in the apprenticeship, was given the option of joining the Army Reserve, which I stayed in there for 7 years.
You're a champion, Roddy.
Well, I just enjoy doing it, and this year's special for me because it's 50 years to this year since I started my business, and I'm going to retire.
Well, that's L-E-S-T. You want to write these down so you don't muck them up? L-E-S-T. W-E.
Yes.
All right, mate, you're right.
And the four gets, and don't forget the end of it. Yes, no trouble.
All right,
thank
mate.
Thank you.
Good
catch
on you.
Later.
See you, mate. Bye. Richard's in Echuca. What's happening, Richard?
G'day, mate. Just follow, you know, long-time listener, first-time caller. So,
thank
out
you.
Here at Echuca, just getting ready to start work on the paddle steamers on the Canberra.
The Canberra?
Yes. Nice little two-story boat here.
Well, tell me your story, Richard. Are you a captain or a – what are you?
No, I'm captain on the Cumbaruna and a couple of the other boats as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just a beautiful morning down here, nice and crisp. But I was sort of a bit of a boat theory today, a bit of boat theme. I thought I'd give you a call.
How's the Murray looking?
It's a little bit low at the moment. It's getting quite low and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for a rise soon.
You've noticed those sort of things because you've been on the Murray for a good while, have you?
Yeah, I've spent most of my life on the river, so yeah. Yeah, so sort of when you're doing your tours next, you should drop into Echuca and do a bit of a stream here from the Canberra.
How big's the Canberra?
Oh, we can take 85 people.
Well, I wasn't thinking of cruising down the river on a Sunday morning, but we've been to Echuca. I love Echuca. I like the cake shop there or the bakery. Done that.
Yep.
Rich, so how long did it take to get your paddle boat license?
About 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, just lots of study and lots of exams and lots of hours on the boats, clocking up the hours.
And what have you got to do? Have you got to know about the snags in the river and all that sort of stuff, or what do you do?
That's funny enough. We said sort of natural, but what with most of the training we do is involved in the ocean, and then we go to the river, and it's a totally different thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just sitting here now, watching the smoke start to come out of the boats. Got the PS Melbourne across the other side, just starting to steam up. Canberra steaming up, and the Emu steaming up at the moment. So
obviously, lots of visitors around the place, are there, to go on the boats? Yeah, they
yeah,
all...
we've had a pretty good Easter.
Yeah, well, good on you. Yeah. All right, mate. Yeah. Good on you.
No worries. You have a good one. Hope to see you out here sometime.
See you, mate.
See you, mate. Cheers.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Kim from Pimba. How are you?
In South Australia.
In South Australia, yep. You knew me previously from Will Kenya. I used to give you the river updates about 15 years ago.
And what are you up to, Kim?
Left Will Kenya, Broken Hill. I'm now driving triple road trains in South Australia.
Carrying what?
Copper concentrate.
Oh, boy. Well, that's worth a lot of money too.
Yeah, it sure is.
It's getting up there, isn't it? It's more than silver now, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. But I just carry the stuff and drop it off at a railhead and then go back and get another load. And yeah, life's pretty good. We're living down at Victor Harbour now. We left Broken Hill about 15 years ago and bought a tourism business that COVID solved that problem for us. And started driving trucks, so a little bit different from when you knew me at regional and community development and Arts New South Wales and those other venues. Anyway, I just thought I'd give you a ring and say good day. And
tell me about dragging a. Did you say it's a triple?
Triple road trains, yes.
So how much does that carry? Like, what's the weight of that?
We're about 138 tonnes.
Gee, and how many trips? You say you take that from where to where?
We go from the mine site to Pimba to the railhead, and we do two a day.
And where's the mine site at?
It's about 60 kilometres southeast of Pimba.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I look at the price of copper from time to time, and it's just, that's why people are stealing copper. It's worth a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're carrying it in the raw concentrates.
So. Yeah.
Mm. Yep.
So, Kimmy, how's life on the road?
Pretty good, actually. Yeah, we're the Stuart Highway's still busy. There's still a few caravans and people travelling. So, I mean, the world's full of doom and gloom. But as we come close to Anzac Day, we've got to start thinking of things in the past. And I'm a veteran, so we'll be making attendance.
Yes, well, it's the national day, really, in lots of ways. So Anzac Day, it's a time when you think about, what it means to be Australian or to all people, I think.
It sure does, and it gives us pause to reflect about what's happening at the moment too. So
I'll say, and do I think about that? I think about that all the time. And Kimmy, nice to talk to you, mate. We'll catch up sometime. Yeah.
I just have a big shout out to my mates Kim and Andrea. They listen every Sunday morning, as do I, because all we can get is the ABC out here in the bush. So we love it. We love it.
All right, mate. I'll play your song later. Good on you.
Good on you. See ya.
See you, mate. Bye. 1300 700 222. G'day. This is Macca.
Macca, how are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Just come down from Darwin down the highway, and I've got to give a shout out to the road workers up there on the NT where the floods went through up further, because the road got absolutely hammered. The potholes there, I mean, I went into one pothole and I upset a farmer. He was watering some cattle in it. It was, you park a mini miner in it, it's still a pothole. And they've filled all them potholes up the best they can on the way down. The road's still a mess. There's some parts where there's just no road. The bitumen's just been washed clean off it, and the effort they've put in to keep traffic travelling safely up and down that road, unbelievable.
Well, that's, yeah, and without that we'd all be ruined, Rod, wouldn't we?
Oh, mate, yeah, and that country up there where they've had that rain, even here I've just pulled up at Alice Springs, from there all the way down, grass from knee to hip high. Everything's green. You look at all the ranges around Alice Springs around here, they're all green. Everything's green and beautiful. But it's done some damage to the roads, I'll tell you.
Rod, and what are you carrying, Rod?
We took the stuff up to televise the football game out of Darwin back to Sydney so you could watch the Dolphins and Penrith.
All right. Yeah, that was... That was close. And Do you bring the gear back? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, you take it up, unload it, and then pack it up after the match, and you're on your way back to where?
Well, take it up. The production truck just sits there and gets plugged in. The other one's got all the cameras in, and then now we've got to head back down the middle, change the plans. Now they're going to send us over to Perth for cage fighting, I think, at UFC.
Wow.
So they'll stay over there, then we'll fly back. And the trucks will stay over there, do a couple of football games over there, then someone else will go and get them.
And this is what you do for a living, Rod?
That's it, yep. Just shuffle around the countryside so people can sit on their bums in their lounge room and watch footy.
Exactly. I've given that all away, you know. I think, because I used to watch TV when I was a kid, and my mother said, because I wasn't studying, I'd be watching TV or something, she'd say, now, are you any better off after all that's happened? And so I feel guilty now when I sit and watch TV because I feel I'm wasting time, you know, sitting on my bum, as you said. So I try to limit my television watching and I think, well, I could be learning the guitar. I could be out planting those plants. I could be – there's lots of things you could be doing, Rod, than sitting on your bum.
Yeah, well, I like it. I like it on the road. I've been on the road for a long time, and it's the people you meet, you know, caravanners and other people where you pull up and I'll want to have a chat to you or ask you about roads or whatever. Although they're very light, people have to remember that a lot of these communities up here rely on caravans, and some of the roadhouses you pull up at the sign of the door says, due to the lack of traffic, we're only open from 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. So it just goes to show you how much the traffic's backed off. The dry's coming. The local up at Darwin told me that the dragonflies are out. Means that the dry's coming. The red ones means it's coming. The blue ones means it's here. So the front of the truck's covered with red ones, so the dry can't be that far away.
No, exactly, and this, as you say, there's something about being on the road. It's almost a sense of freedom, and when you look around the world and you see what the government in Iran has done to the Iranian people, and you look at China and freedom, we take it for granted. I'll tell you who don't take it for granted. That's the Americans. They don't take it for granted, but we seem to take everything for granted here, and freedom's just the one thing you can do and get out there. But you know, you live in another country, you won't be able to do anything like you do in Australia.
No, you can't just pack up, jump in your car and bugger off somewhere.
No.
It's just not on, you know.
Exactly.
Some places you can't go there, you've got to have a permit to go there, you want to buy what,
yeah.
You want how much what. Yeah, so it's just rubbish,
yeah. Yeah, so, but I don't know how you protect it when you look at the world and it's being covered with technology and everybody knows everything about you and where you are and all those sort of things, and they want to know even more. And I don't think governments realise that, and I don't think they protect us properly.
Mate, yeah. Well, I had a bloke explain it to me the other day, and he said, we're in this predicament because a bully got into a fight and got his nose punched, and now he wants everybody else to go and help him get out of it.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but yes, everybody's got an explanation of about everything, Roddy. All right, mate, good on you. Nice to talk to you, Rod.
All right, mate, you take care. Thanks for the program.
That's a pleasure, mate. Bye.
Ladders, tweets and faxes. We get stacks,
and stacks of emails. We do from Mehmet Tuglu. He says, I came to Australia from Turkey as a skilled migrant in 1993. Since then, I've travelled all over Australia and clocked nearly 2 million kilometres for my work. My job was to do the mobile phone towers, and I will not go into the technical details here, but all my colleagues and I have listened to your Sunday show on many weekends as we drove all over the land, in all states. We have many stories, but they wouldn't fit into even your show. As we were always on the run, we never had time to give you a call either. Oh, come on, Mehmet. Anyway, he says, I am now retired and I have a problem. Before technology, we used to generate what we called path profiles from high-scale topographic paper maps. Millions of Australian hours have gone into the making of those maps, and they are so perfect. Just check the few pictures I attached. They show things like hayshed and ruins and similar minute details. This goes to show they were not totally extracted from aerial photography, and surveyors have actually been to those places. Although we only need contour lines for our work, the amount of detail in these maps has never failed to amaze me. The maps are still neatly stored in my shed, although I've never needed them for 20 years. I'm in the process of clearing up my work-related items and have been looking for people or organisations that might want them. It would be a big waste to dump these in the recycling bin. I don't know the exact number, but it could be around 600 to 800. I'd love to see them go to a good home, says Mehmet. Maybe you can reach out to your audience to check if anyone might want to have them. Most of my maps are from New South Wales, but I have many from the other states too. I might have maps of entire towns and their surroundings. These could be useful for councils, libraries, landowners, bushwalkers, park rangers. I don't know. In the past, they were available locally at newsagents and information offices, and they might still be selling them, but I doubt it. Nowadays, electronic copies of all topographic maps are available online from various sources. Anyone interested can email me their location. I'd be happy to send their maps over if I have them, and if they are happy to cover the cost of postage. I've reached out to a few places already, but I didn't even get an answer back. I'm happy to donate them all, as long as the delivery fee is covered or someone picks them up. There are just too many. Mind you, as they were used for work, some of them would have lines and marks on them, but mostly in pencil. I was wondering if you could mention this on your show. Note that I have a speech condition called spasmodic dysphonia, and I may not be able to speak to you. Kind regards, says Mehmet Tuglu. Mehmet, we'll see what we can do. Mehmet's email is mztuglu, that's mztuglu@gmail.com. I love paper maps, I really do. And Mehmet has a PS. He says, as Anzac Day approaches, let me take this opportunity to salute the heroes that lost their lives at Gallipoli and other fronts around the globe. Anzac Day is as important to Turks as Australians, and I have attended almost every dawn service since I came to Australia. You're a champion, Mehmet. This from Adam Burnett. He says, good morning, Australia all over, and team. Morning, team. I just thought I'd highlight that there is another fuel supply here in Darwin that was recently built for the US military. Amazing that the US can build this on our shores, but our government overlooks such a necessity. Maybe this could become available for trucking, if not the public, says Adam. What a good idea. Jill Louise Dawson says, your program is like heading around our great country on a virtual tour. I did that during our COVID lockdowns through my art. There's no stopping my journey now. Please find attached an e-pic of one of my rocky landscapes in acrylic paint. It's called Arkarula Dreaming. One day soon I'll get there in person. Many thanks from me, a retired teacher, still living well, says Jill Dawson. Thanks, Jill. And finally from Terry. Macca, I just wanted to let you know that Queensland Dogs is hosting this year's National Dog Agility Competition with dogs from all over Australia and New Zealand competing at different levels across different events, hoping to make it to the finals and be crowned top dog. The event starts in June, the 23rd of June, with the state teams competing against each other, followed by event heats from Wednesday the 24th to Saturday the 27th of June. Then the finals on the Sunday for those dogs that win their place through the heats. You should come, Macca, and visit or even broadcast. On a different topic, since moving to Brisbane from Sydney 4 years ago, I found Queensland winter strawberries, and now only buy strawberries during May to October. Once you've tasted them, I'm sure you'll agree it'll be worth the trip. Is it Jumbuck?
Yeah, how you going, Mac?
All right, Jumbuck, where are you?
I'm in Port Pirie, mate. Yeah, I just...
Got a yarn?
I'm senior since 1960. I rang up...
You're going to talk about what? Cooper Creek? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, the other day I joined the highways in 1975 up the Strzelecki track, and the boss sent me up to Nemanka and with a front-end loader on a truck, and I had to clean. I stayed there for a week in my swag, and I had to clean all the white sand on each. It was about 6 foot deep, and I had to clean it all on each side of the causeway in Nemanka. so people can get through there. But, you know, that was in March in 75. It was just after the 74 flood.
Yeah, big flood, that. That was a big flood.
Yeah, yeah,
that filled, it was, that, yeah. That filled Lake Eyre.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mm. And so the Pelicans had to fly from Lake Calabona up near Mount Hopeless. They had to fly from Lake Eyre to Lake Calabona to get a feed of fish because they had all young ones and they had no fish in Lake Eyre. So they had to fly over to Calabona and then fly back to feed them. Yeah.
Well, that was the time. And so all the sand that was piled up was a lovely pure sand, I suppose, because it had been washed down and, on both sides of the highway.
It was real white sand, Macca. Yeah, it was real white sand. Yeah. I had to just dump it up around the corner, yeah.
Great.
But, yeah, I spent about 5 days, 6 days there, and I had to go up the hotel for tea, but, yeah.
A lot of...
I lived in my swag there for a while, yeah.
A lot of water still coming down. I think, I don't know what the Cooper looks like at the moment, but must be still a lot of water in the Cooper.
Yeah, there's a small flood coming down. My mate rang me up from Roma, Dicko White. He rang me up and he said that it's up Durham Downs there, just above Durham Downs the other day, last week, and he said it's only a small flood, but, it'll run into Lake Eyre South, I think. Yeah, fill up that one too.
Yeah, all right. Well, would be good to be up there now and have a look around, I reckon.
Yeah, you will. You want a good fly net because I reckon there's a lot of Trevor Wright reckons there's just bush flies up there by the minions.
All right, Jumbuck.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to you.
Another one there. I was with Mansell's in Jackson. Yeah. I was with Mansell's in Jackson there working and driving trucks. And I had to drive a grader across the causeway at Nacundra. And Nick Drummond said, the boss said, you'll get across there. And the water on the Wilson River was right up to the top of the grader wheels on the grader. But I had a six-wheel drive grader. And, I had to go down halfway to Tipperborough to pull a Verdon's pipe truck out the bog.
Jumbuck survives again. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Macca. Yeah, bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, good morning, Macca. It's Pammy Cuppo from Colac, Victoria.
Hi, Pammy.
Yeah, look, we're over in Adelaide. We're babysitting a house and two dogs for friends in Glenelg, but my husband wasn't going to come because he didn't want to miss his 53rd consecutive march with the Colac City Band for the Anzac March next Saturday.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to, at 82, he's going to hop on a plane and fly back to Avalon Airport, and our kids are going to pick him up and so he can do his 53rd march consecutively. And I'm very, wow, very proud of him.
Oh, yeah. What's his name, Pam?
Brian Cuthbertson.
There you go. Well, that's a great record, isn't it?
It is a brilliant record. He said, no, we can't go and babysit this house and dogs because I don't want to miss the Anzac market. And I said, well, you can fly home and do it. So he's flying home to do it. So I think he's very, very, he's a great guy. He's a real sweetie, actually. And I'm sure the kids will be listening and hear their mum on the phone praising Dad up.
And the 53rd month, that's in Colac, is it?
Colac, yes. He's been with the Colac City Band for...
What's he play?
Double B bass.
Double B bass. Good on him. Yeah. Good on him.
But he's leading the march, so it'd be fantastic for people to say hello to
it's
Brian.
Brian Cuthbert. Good on you, Brian. It's a great day. Anzac Day is a national day, I reckon. It's a great national day for all of us to think about where we are and why we're here and what has gone before, I think. Good on you, Pammy.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Macca. I've run you before. About our beautiful lake and that. But anyway, all right, so... everybody cheer up for Brian for next week.
All right. Good on you.
Thank you very much, Macca. Bye-bye.
Bye. double B bass. This is the Gumboot Band, kids. Who we had some mighty times on the road with, and we did last year, and I hope to this year too. The trumpets and the trombones and the bits and pieces. Lots of interest in the maps. I've enjoyed your company. Keep the cards and letters coming. Sun is shining here. Stay tuned on ABC Local Radio, ladies and gentlemen. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at macatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.